Let's get started.
Let's do this. I heard it. I heard the horns. Exactly.
Hey, Liz.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm living large on the West Coast.
Oh, my God. I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Perfect weather, you know.
Yeah.
Why did I leave?
I know. God. Sometimes these thoughts cross my mind as well.
What's been top of mind for you, Liz?
Oh, you'll be so shocked to learn, Chris, that top of mind for me is yet another podcast.
Love it. I love it. You're keeping the podcast game strong.
I mean, we're living in a truly golden age of podcasting. So have you heard of the podcast Normal Gossip?
Only through your Instagram feed.
Okay. So a few months ago, a friend slid into my DMs and was like, have you ever listened to this podcast? I think you'd like it. And I was like, I don't know what you mean, what this says about me, that you saw the title of this and you were like, this is Liz's shit. But I tried it and OMG, she was right. It is totally my shit. So the whole premise is that there is a host named Kelsey McKinney who brings on a guest every week and shares with them an everyday gossip story. It's like a real story submitted by a listener. And what makes it work is that she's an excellent storyteller and she's got a great podcast voice and she's super fun. And she just really invites the guests into the story by making it a bit of a like choose your own adventure, like pausing and being like, what would you do here? Or how are you feeling right now if you're the protagonist, like that kind of thing. And the guests are usually comedians or performers and they're really fun too. And some of the stories are just like so delicious and they're all relatable because they're all about just like people's work drama or their insane family Christmas or something that happened in their kickball league. And she starts every episode by asking each guest what their relationship with gossip is. And in reflecting on this question myself, it has helped me come to terms with the fact that when it has nothing to do with me, like I just fucking love gossip. I love a bonkers story. That's one of the things that you and I have in common. And I've never felt bad about that, right?
Yeah.
But there is all of this stigma, this evangelical stigma that I carry against gossip, right? Yeah. And some of that I feel like is warranted. Like if you're using gossip for evil, like get out of there. But if it's like benign gossip, like your friend telling you about her brother's crazy roommate, or if it's something that happened to me that I like can't wait to share, like I can now just accept the fact that I love this. Like millennia of Asian moms before me and almost every other person alive.
Oh man, what a great, first of all, what a great premise for a podcast. It's just so natural. Uh-huh. And again, it's so good. It makes you wonder why didn't someone else do this before? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure they've tried, but, and then secondly, this question, like what's your relationship to gossip? Such a great starting question.
Yes.
Never really thought about that.
Yes. And people get real deep. Like people have talked about like gossip as like a tool of the marginalized to like share information. You know what I mean? And like people have unpacked their evangelical baggage or talked about how it's like it's seen as a specifically female sin. Which is, I thought was super interesting and accurate.
Yes.
So, I just, I appreciate both parts of it. I appreciate the, like, how it has helped me better understand myself and become more accepting of this thing that I clearly love and have not been able to accept. But also, every week, it's just a story that's, like, high drama, low stakes. It's the perfect combination. And, your question too about like why no one has done this before. Apparently it came about because during the pandemic, she was like, it was what I missed most. Like there was no gossip to be had.
Yeah.
Because people weren't going into work. they weren't seeing their families or their friends, right? Yes. She was like, what am I supposed to talk about?
Yes.
And then she just like tweeted. She was like, somebody pay me to start a podcast called Normal Gossip where I just tell like a stranger's gossip story. And then she worked for like a media company and they were like, how about you, instead of just tweeting your good ideas into the ether, like come to us with them and we will actually do it. So here we are.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
I'm like brilliant. Full of envy that someone else came up with this awesome premise.
It's so good. It's so good.
I love this also, this point about like the pandemic and how we've been all just starved of gossip.
Yes.
I think I experienced this and I didn't even realize what I was experiencing. Have you ever like, I don't know, like caught up with a friend who you used to be like, knew a lot of like mutual people.
Uh-huh.
And then like, you know, it's been a while and then you catch up again and like you kind of run into a wall.
Yes.
I think it's because we don't have gossip to share.
Yes.
We don't have like mutual people to talk about anymore.
Yes. 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 Or like when I am like in one of these conversations, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel like college friend is like mm-hmm. often falls into this category.
Right.
The easiest pivot is to be like, who have you heard from lately?
Yeah.
Or like, who are you still in touch with?
Yeah.
And then that is like the perfect way to elicit these, exactly this.
Yes. I feel like I learn a lot hearing about stories of people that have gone through some real things that are relatable.
Totally.
And it's like a learning experience for me. So what is the line between, because I feel like gossip has such baggage, evangelical baggage, and just correct. Even like in our culture baggage, like, is it even called gossip if you're sharing a story that's supposed to be like, you know, funny, insightful, educational, you know, not damaging in any way? Is that still considered gossip, or do we categorize that as something else?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's very blurry, right? Yeah. Like the very blurry line between like information sharing and gossip. But I feel like gossip I feel like that usually takes the form of a story. Like there is a series of events that happens, because like me sharing like how much money I make, you know, or like people sharing that's not, I don't think that's gossip.
Okay. According to Google, the definition of gossip is casual or unconstrained conversation or reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as being true. So I guess there's like possibly like a false kind of aspect to gossip.
Yeah,
maybe
speculative.
Yeah, maybe that kind of, that's where, and I can see where, you know, things like that might be damaging, but, you know, like, I think what we're talking about is like sharing stories where, you know, like we're learning something, we find the humor in it, you know, we're not, you know, defaming somebody, things like that, maybe.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, could yeah, be. Yeah. But then sometimes I'm just like, you know, for example, like the Harvey Weinstein Whisper Network, it's like, is it defamatory if it's fucking true? And it's like protecting, it's shared as a means of like trying to protect other people. You know what I mean? Like,
well, of course not. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it's not defaming, obviously, if it's true.
If it's
and
true.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but would we call that gossip, I guess? Or I don't know.
Another interesting thing is she sometimes asks guests if they identify as a gossip. And what's interesting is that most guests will readily acknowledge that they love it, but very few will say, yes, I am a gossip.
Interesting.
And that distinction, I think, is really interesting because I feel the same way. I don't think I am a gossip, but I like it. And I think, I wonder if it's like that sense of like it being part of your identity. You know what I mean? That like people are like resistant to, because I don't feel like being a gossip is part of my identity. I just feel like it's some like, I'm just like a recreational gossip or not a professional one. You know, I'm amateur. I'm just amateur.
Well, if you go on this podcast, I think you'll up your professional credentials.
Here. I mean, if I were to tell a great story on this podcast, then and someone were to compensate me for it, then perhaps. But yeah, I just thought, I think that's really interesting too. And maybe a sign of just like that baggage that maybe we all have internalized, that like gossip is the worst. So even if you can admit to enjoying it guiltily, like you can't, it's like harder to say that. No one wants to identify as one. So
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. I'm gonna have a listen for sure.
Yeah. It's so good. Okay. Woo! I feel like we have that was like a little miniature deep dive in and of itself. But otherwise, my friend, yes. What is top of mind for you?
Top of mind for me. So I mentioned I'm in California at the time at the moment. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I've been bouncing around for the last, I would say even going back like 2 or 3 years. And, you know, like slowly settling in, but, you know, haven't really established myself in a particular place yet. Hopefully by the end of this year, I will be a bona fide and legitimate New York resident, which Ayo. Is crazy to say.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still rocking the California license. I've spent, you know, a lot of time here, you know, throughout the year. And so I have not, because I haven't established myself officially as a New Yorker, I am, for the last time, voting in this election as a Californian.
Wow, wow, wow. The end yes. of an era.
I know.
And by era, I mean like your entire life up to this point, right?
That's right.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
It's a little bittersweet because, as you know, California elections are highly bonkers,
insane.
Highly consequential, and anachronistic, and just the stakes couldn't be higher, right?
Yes.
There are these, if you're not, for the listener, if you're not familiar, there are these propositions that you vote on, like, it's like direct democracy, right? Mm-hmm. Which sounds like a good thing, but is a completely, like, too much is at stake. Sometimes, you know, to just like just throw into, you know, a populace that maybe sometimes isn't like fully up to date on the details or anything like that, right? And
yes.
these are like massively consequential bills or
yes.
propositions that become automatically laws, you know?
Yes. Yes. Just to give an example, mm-hmm. there's always like 13 to 18 ballot initiatives that you vote on. I can't remember if this was, I think this was at least two of these were on the same ballot. I once had to vote on whether to make marijuana legal in California and whether to abolish the three strikes law, and also whether porn stars in LA County should have to wear condoms. And I was like, I am woefully unqualified to comment on literally any of these things.
And it's terrifying because we're conscientious voters
yes.
that care about these issues, and even we're lost. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
if you spread that out to millions of people, it's just, it's shocking when you think about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, truly.
So anyways, I was reading, there was this one guy named Dave Min. He ran for the representative, like the U.S. rep of my district a few years ago. I was actually involved in part of his campaign. Katie Porter actually ended up winning that seat, which is great for everybody because Katie Porter is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave Min went on to become a state senator in California.
Mm-hmm.
He posted this really interesting thing on his social media talking about, like he starts by saying, This year, he's not sharing his endorsements in terms of his vote, how he's voting for these propositions. But he provided a couple interesting guidelines I hadn't thought before. So basically the context is this. He basically is making the argument that a lot of these ballot initiatives, what they end up doing is because they're voted on by the populace, they end up tying the hands of the legislature.
Ah, interesting.
So even if you have a legislature who has studied these bills and have like really broken down the pros and cons, and there's like even like a supermajority of them in California, that would be like the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
who believe like this is the way, like this is the better way for the state.
Mm-hmm.
If certain things become law, then basically it ties their hands.
Yeah.
And they can't do anything about it, right?
Yeah.
And it's very constraining. So that's one thing. Number two, he says, even the most innocent sounding propositions have a ton of special interests behind it.
Yes.
That kind of craft this stuff in a very misleading way.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that unless you're like deep into the inside organs of the, you know, policymaking process in California, which the vast majority, including myself, are not privy to.
Mm-hmm.
These things just appear like a blurb on the voter guide. and they're framed in incredibly misleading ways.
Yes.
And they often go to enrich special lobbies and stuff in ways that the voter cannot possibly understand.
Yeah.
So based on that, most, he says, he advises to vote no on most of these propositions, no matter what they sound like. And yeah. So he gave two guidelines as to when that might be an exception. One is when you really do feel like constraining the legislature is worth it.
Okay.
And one, if like obviously this is an issue that you deeply, deeply care about that you think is like definitely the right way.
Yeah.
So those are the two exceptions for voting yes, but otherwise to vote no.
That's super interesting. Mm-hmm. My brother has a very similar take, actually, especially because I think California often, a lot of those ballot initiatives are like constitutional amendments.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, why are we amending the Constitution for like this teeny tiny thing, right? Like we're granting all of these like inalienable rights and X and Y and Z. And now we are also like declaring like this, make, you know what I mean? And so he's just, his default is also to vote no on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Anyway, well, I am glad that you get to go out with a bang. You get to end this chapter of your voting life by voting on such a wide and illustrious range of topics. Yeah. And that Dave Min has just been like, hey, everybody, you should just vote no on everything.
Don't quote him on it. Well, I mean, he put it out there, so he does own it. But
yeah,
we'll see.
I respect that. It's kind of like the argument's like, let legislators do their jobs.
Which yeah, that's basically what he's saying. Yeah, it's like, hey, like you elected us to represent. So, you know, we have all this teams of people doing analysis. So let us do the analysis and, you know, we'll put it to you or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. Yeah.
So my last go around.
Wow. Well, goodbye, congratulations. California.
Good luck on the future. Yeah. I leave you with my vote.
God, as you like burn and sink into the sea all at the same time. Not you,
see
California.
Ya. See ya.
God.
Okay. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. And we're pivoting now to an even more fun topic, in my opinion. I love topics like this. Today, we're talking about couple friends. We're talking about couple friends today. Liz, you are married and in a long-term relationship. I am also in a relationship, but I have been single for the most like vast majority of my life. Mm-hmm. And while I was single, I mean, call me a rarity here, but I was actually really comfortable with being a third wheel.
Uh-huh.
There's something about like triangulating a relationship I found to be a really fascinating and interesting social experience for me. Like I can kind of see, you know, different aspects of my friends coming out and kind of like, they play off of me and they play off of each other. And, you know, I also felt sort of like I was like some like, you know, reporter in the wild that was like coming back to kind of tell them what the new world of online dating was like, you know, mm-hmm. especially to a couple that's been out of the game,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, speaking of gossip, right? Just like hearing all the stories from that whole thing.
Yes. You had some great ones.
Exactly. Remember that time I got stood up and I was like, live tweeting with you?
Yes. And also the time you like flew to North Carolina.
No, I took a bus. Yes.
You took a bus to North Carolina. Right. Incredible. Yes.
Right. So dispatches from singlehood.
Truly.
I really enjoyed that part of it. And as a single person in these kind of like three-way, you know, friendships, you really only have to have strong chemistry with like one of the two people you're hanging out with, right? I mean, it's ideal if you all get along, but really if you're really close friends with one of them, then it's all good. And, you know, if one of them's disengaged, you only have to play off of one of them. Couples themselves are also themselves a unique persona, right?
Yes.
That you can interact with. So,
yes.
You know, I always found that to be easy. Now that I'm in a relationship, I'm not saying it's difficult. In a lot of ways, it's like kind of better, you know, in terms of like my dynamics. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that my partner is like so good in social situations.
Mm-hmm.
But I am spending a lot more time with other couples now than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that these dynamics have shifted, not mm-hmm. in any kind of particular good or bad way. But yeah, definitely things, interactions that I'm not used to thinking about or caring about or having to accommodate for, And so, yeah, I just thought that was an interesting topic to talk about, because I haven't really talked about like what couple friendships are like what kind of dynamics goes into these things. Mm. Yeah.
I have many, many feelings and thoughts, so I'm very excited to get into this with you.
Okay. Yes. So where should we start? Like, can you describe a little bit about your situation? You are with your partner for a long time. What's it like when you're thinking about, or like when you're, you know, interacting with other couples? Do you ever have to think about that kind of stuff, or does it come naturally?
Ooh, this is such a good question. So I think I need to set some context before we start. So I met my spouse in grad school, and I was just like very much a fun single lady for the first 3 years of grad school. So I had like a large, very vibrant, like circle of friends. I was in my early 20s. So it was that stage of life when like I was willing to do anything on a random Tuesday with pretty much anybody, you know? So like, So I had a lot of friends. And when I started dating my spouse, the question was less about making couple friends and more about like, how do we make space for like, you know, both sets of friends, right? Like, how do we integrate basically another social calendar into our life? Mm-hmm. And the big issue there was that I'm extremely extroverted and my spouse is almost equally introverted. And so that became like a big, that was like something we had to figure out. And the solution we came up with was just that I went out a lot more than he did. Like I regularly went out without him, and we felt great about it because I got my social needs met and he got his alone time met, right? Everybody Perfect. Won.
Yeah.
But then when we moved away from LA to the San Francisco Bay Area, it was a very different situation because we were moving as a unit for the first time and people were meeting us in it as a unit. And it just felt like this was a period of time when like it was like time to make couple friends. Mm-hmm. And that's very different than making single friends, because there's so many more relationships involved, right?
Yes, like it's like 100% more.
Even more than that. So
that's right.
You know, say like, for example, when I met you for the first time.
Yes.
Just to give an overly simplified example, like there's only four possible outcomes, right? We both like each other. We both don't like each other. I like you, but you don't like me. Or you like me and I don't like you, right? Yes. So the odds of us connecting in this overly simplistic model are 1 in 4. Uh-huh. But then when you invite an additional 2 people into the mix, you have to like consider the relationship that every person has with every other person in the unit.
Yeah.
And the likelihood of both of you liking both of them and both of them also liking both of you becomes much, much, much lower than 1 in 4. So
also, I mean, I'll just add on that because it goes back to my point about couples having their own personas as a couple.
Yes.
That whole thing has to work too.
That's so true. Because even if you like them both individually, if you don't like their dynamic, you gotta go. And I don't know if you've ever been on like couple, like double dates like this, where it's just like, wow, that vibe is bad. And you just like, we can't do this again. Has that ever happened to you?
Ooh, okay. I'll think about that, but please keep going. Yeah.
So all that to say that like I'm really glad you pointed that out because I've not considered that before. But yes, it's not just a matter. Every individual has to like every other individual. And then you also have to like their couple persona, like unit persona as well.
Yeah.
So it just became – and I mean on top of that, we were also older, right? And so – I was no longer in the stage of my life when I was willing to hang out with literally anybody on a random Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whatever hangout opportunity had to be better than sitting on the couch next to my spouse watching Netflix, which is something I love doing, right? So Just there were like fewer opportunities to make friends than there were in my previous chapters of life. So just logistically, it also became harder as well. So all right. that to say that like because of both the number of people involved and just because of like life stage and like opportunities to make friends, like it just becomes a lot harder, I think, to make couple friends.
As an extrovert, your partner is an introvert. Mm-hmm. How does that, like, what does chemistry look like for, like, when you meet a couple where the chemistry works, like, what does that usually look like and how does that usually play out?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like, I mean, this is, again, an overly simplistic interpretation. I feel like, I mean, the best couple friends that we've ever made was another couple in which there was also an extrovert and an introvert, and it was the man in this heterosexual couple that was the extrovert and the partner was an introvert. Because I think sometimes if the woman is also extroverted we're dealing with a heterosexual couple, then sometimes it just becomes like a gab fest between me and her, and then our quieter spouses like are kind of like off to the side, right? But then I feel like something about that cross-gender extroversion match makes it a more inclusive experience for everyone, because then like the other person, I can't fully explain why that is, but so that works well for us. It also works well for us when like both people in the unit are extroverts. Is that true for you and your spouse? Are you both extroverts, would you say?
Yeah, I think we both are. She's a probably the most pure extrovert I've ever met in my life.
I can see
like
that.
In the classic definition, like she, without social interaction, she just like runs out of energy.
Yeah.
But when you just put people in front of her, she could just go all night, really.
Yeah.
I think I'm more extroverted now. But I can kind of play both, right? I can kind of like swing both. But in a social situation, we both read as extroverts.
Yes.
We approach conversations and social situations very similarly, in the sense that like we're scanning for those that may be like excluded, you know, her especially. I think she's really good about like finding the ones that are like maybe not being drawn in, and then like goes right to that person. So it's like social magic when you kind of throw into the mix, like the entire room just like improves socially. I think like she's really good at that.
Yeah, she's
and
awesome.
I try to play a similar role. I try to play like a kind of facilitating role kind of thing. And so with the two of us, it's like it's usually good. So I think it's the tricky thing for us is like really figuring out, do we have chemistry? Do we have real chemistry with this other couple friend? Or is it just the two of us like really like
pulling the weight?
Exactly. Which it doesn't feel like weight when we're in it. Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know.
That's really fascinating. Is that hard to discern, though? Because I feel like as an individual extrovert who is often put in these, like, who has always been the person who gets put at the rando table at the wedding because they're like, oh, Liz can take care of herself.
Yes.
I can always tell. Like, do you have to discern as a couple? Like, was that just us sparkling, or is there really a connection here?
No, I don't think we've ever, like, I think that it's always an enjoyable experience. Mm-hmm. But if I'm assessing it after the fact, I could be like, wow, that couple, I want to go on vacation with them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not the couple. It's just that the couple dynamic works well. Like, let's say one of them is the one that's kind of like the more extroverted one. Mm-hmm. And the other one is, let's say, you know, like, introverted, but, you know, like not like disengaged, let's say.
Okay.
So that's enough to be like, I don't know, that there's this sort of like great chemistry as a couple, but without the extroverted one, maybe it would fall apart, you know? Mm-hmm. But there are those couples where maybe not all four are clicking, but it's enough where the couples are clicking enough to be like, hey, I'm really comfortable going on vacation with you.
It'd
be awesome to go on. I think we'd have great vacation chemistry.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely a hierarchy of couple friends
where
we are always enjoying, or most of the part, like it's very rare that we encounter a couple where like, let's get the hell out of here.
Right,
it's a very rare situation.
Uh-huh.
But there is definitely those that we would without a question go on vacation with, and then others that were like, oh yeah, 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 let's do it one day, but like nothing, you know.
Right.
And
right,
nobody
right.
listening here, by the way, you're anyone listening, you're all vacation. So. just to be clear.
As far as we know. Okay, so I love this so much. I think that's totally right. Like there is a hierarchy where there's like vacation friends, come over and hang out all day friends. Like yeah. we could watch football all day and just hang out. And then there's also like we can't hang out for dinner friends, you know, like, but in terms of like the couples that really hit high on that hierarchy, like is there any like pattern or commonality that you notice among them?
I think the one that hits best is when any permutation is like equally enjoyable. So like let's say we're hanging out as a four,
yeah,
and then the two, like let's say my partner and let's say for example it's a heterosexual couple,
uh-huh.
let's say the two women, you know, they're like, oh, we're gonna run an errand, we're gonna go out, right?
Uh-huh.
Then like it's me and the guy and we click just fine.
Yes.
Like smooth. Like yes. everything's great. We're really enjoying each other's company. They come back and then let's say me and then the you know, woman go out for a run and we have, you know, like a great chemistry and mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the four-way chemistry. I think that would be like the real apex, I think, of a couple friendship. Yes. That's the way I think about it.
But. I mean, and also so rare. Where like every single person really clicks with every other person. Incredibly yes. rare.
Yes, I think that's right. I think there are like a couple that I would describe in that tier.
Uh-huh.
And then yeah, they're definitely vacation friends, right?
Yeah.
Are you able to like when you're walking around and like you meet people, like are you able to discern, like are you able to like have an instinct like, oh, this could work or this might work?
I don't know if it's like right away, but like oftentimes afterwards, I do love like going back and like debriefing with my partner, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
what the vibe was like.
The debrief.
It's so fun. God. It is. That is actually one thing that's really fun about making couple friends is that yeah. like you're not alone, right? Like you yeah. have a partner in it. So yeah. you get to do all of the like, all of that internal monologue that you would be doing by yourself when yeah. you're making an individual friend, you get to do with another actual person.
Oh my gosh.
You're never alone. You're never alone.
The like, debrief.
Fun. It's the so debrief fun.
Is the funnest part.
Yeah.
Because right? then, because that's also a great thing about like the whole couples dynamic is because then you could talk about, I mean, not that you're like gossiping necessarily, but you're kind of breaking it down, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, what did you observe? How did you, you know, how was that for you? Like you have one person, you have the other person, you have the dynamic to talk about. So much good things to chew on.
Yeah. Or if like the other couple is like, if something really strange happens, you can just be like, what was that about? Yeah. Oh, it's super fun.
Have you ever had a close friend or family member get to somebody that you just don't vibe with?
It hasn't happened in a long time, actually.
Yeah.
Because especially at this point in our life, we most often meet other couples, right? Uh-huh. And yeah. so sometimes we'll meet somebody and be like, ooh, I like this person, but not that person in the unit.
Yeah.
But at this point, I mean, it's been a very long time, but yes, it has happened where I've had a close friend who has like gotten together with somebody who I was not crazy about.
And does that affect your relationship with that person at all?
I mean, I feel like the way that I danced around it is like, we just keep hanging out one-on-one, you know, yeah. I keep doing the things with a friend that I enjoy doing with them one-on-one and then like yeah. never make the energy to incorporate the other person.
I always said with my partner that this was like a really important thing. Like we're both big on maintaining our, like we, most of the time we go out as a couple
okay.
and like hanging out with people, but uh-huh. We also think it's important to like be like, oh, like my partner will be like, hey, tonight is like girls' night,
yeah.
or this is a friend that just needs one. I want one-on-one time with, and then I say that too, and you know, maintaining that I think is really important.
I think so too. I think it's really important to have a life apart from your partner, and that like often means friendships that are completely separate from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you necessarily need to bring your partner into every friendship, right? Especially if the person is unpartnered. Like that's, like, I don't feel like you necessarily, it feels weird to like weasel one partner into the situation, you know?
Mm-hmm,
But yeah, no, I've always like, I've always found that to be really important. And also just because like, I don't know, I feel like Americans feel like their partners need to be like, everything to them. You know what I mean? Like their emotional and like their best friend and their co-parent and you know what I mean? Their teammate. Like mm-hmm. we just have so many expectations for our romantic partners. And yeah. like, I just think it's really important to have like a wide range of like social support aside from your partner, because it's just not yeah. reasonable to expect one person to meet all of your needs. And like a huge part of that is having friendships that like your partner has nothing to do with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a fundamental point. I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive to be talking about that in a couple's friendship like type of episode, mm-hmm. but I think that's that actually underlies a lot of it, right? You have to maintain still your individuality because, you know, it's too much pressure on one relationship, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And in the long run, it gets you stronger, you know?
Yeah. So. And also just like, I don't know, like if you ever have things about your relationship with your partner that you want to process, it's much easier to do that with somebody who is not also equally good friends with your partner, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes totally. It's helpful because that person knows your partner, but then it just becomes weird because then it's like you're gossiping about this person's friend, your partner who is also friends with this person. So just like, I just think that for everybody's benefit, it's good to have friendships that are just for you.
Yes. Totally.
So
totally.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so curious though, how do you, I mean, I have children and so my partner and like, we don't have like, you know, a nanny or like live in grandparents or anything like that. So we very rarely get to go out at this point with like just other couples. But like, it sounds like for y'all, like if you go out a lot as a couple and you also have individual friends, like y'all must be out a lot.
Yes, I think for the more than the average person, we do get to hang out more. But of course, when we get into couple friends, you have a very finite window before your friends then have like enter the family friends
yes,
realm.
And then you lose them
to the family friends. Right?
Yeah. So,
and in which case, I feel like it's actually easier to keep contact with them when you're single, because you could just, you're the single person, you kind of like float in, say hi to the kids, you know, hang out with, you know, a couple, mm-hmm. and then you could just like see yourself out, right? Mm-hmm. As a couple, I think there's just, I mean, you could still do that, but it's a bit more involved and, you know, there's, you know, different things. And so, yeah, we don't have as many like just couple childless friends as you might think. Hmm. And then within that smaller subset, you got to make sure you're having chemistry with all these couple friends, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's not as much, but yeah, definitely like you're thinking about like going to restaurants together, and then that has a whole different scenario to it than I did as a single person. Because usually as a single person, when you go with a couple, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. like it's, I don't know, like, I don't know. It's like, it's, you know, less thorny situations come up, like how you order food, mm, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. like sometimes when two couples get together, you're just like staring at a menu being like, should we do family style? Do I propose it? Do both of them want to do that? Do we share food? How do we split the bill? Like yeah. all these kind of questions come up. I mean, if you know the couple friend well, then it's not as difficult, but
yeah,
there's more factors to kind of come into play.
God, your literal nightmare.
Oh God. I'm just having anxiety just thinking about
it. No, what do you do? If you're just like, hey, like it's a Thursday night and you're having dinner with a couple friend. What do you do?
I mean, for me, it's always a big anxiety. So I always have a debrief with my partner before.
Oh, like, nice. Have a plan.
Yeah, I need a plan. But sometimes when I get just thrown in there, it is like, I'm not even present because all I'm thinking about is the end, you know? Like, I'm just like, oh man, what are we doing? Do I make a move? What am I supposed to do here? Like, right. And then when it's a couple at a restaurant, it's like one person has like three drinks. One yeah. person doesn't drink. It's like a vegetarian. One person ordered one plate and like everyone's sharing the rest. Like, what do you do?
I don't know. What do you do?
What is equitable? What's fair?
I don't know. I'm asking you. What do you do? How do you navigate this? Is there ever a situation when you're like, we're just going to get this or no?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. There are definitely times when we do that. And then, yeah, very, very generously, there are times when couples like treat us as well. Mm-hmm. But those are like longstanding ones where there's like reciprocity yes. built in.
Yes, yes, yes. The assumption of reciprocity.
Yes, yes. And that's a key component of couples friendships that I should point out, right? Like there's like this history of like reciprocity and like you vibe well in that way. That's a good way to keep things going, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's situational, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, it's great chemistry if, like, at the end, you know, both couples are like, let's just split it down the middle, like, you know, and then that's it, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of, I think that should be the default. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we are too, I think we're kind of too old to be itemizing things.
Yeah.
And I think we just got to be like, we're just going to split this.
Right.
And call it good. And just figure it will all even out at some point, you know?
But even the assumption of that assumes that we're like on equal, somewhat equal financial footing.
Yes, for sure.
Right?
For sure.
So it's like, you think about those things like that's, you don't want to just be hanging out with people in your own little like bracket. That's the other thing, right? So like in New York City, particularly, there's like a huge range of like restaurants, mm-hmm. right? So are you fancy dinner friends with this couple?
Yeah.
Are you hanging out at a pub kind of friends with people?
Yeah.
And I, for one, want to keep up that diversity, but you got to be mindful of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of those things to think about.
Yeah.
Speaking of people we have chemistry with.
Nice. Great segue.
So good. So seamless. I've been thinking about that the last couple of weeks, actually. Our top five this week is the top five people that we would want as dinner guests.
Yes.
We have some parameters for this one. So we're only talking about living people.
Yes.
Just because I think those who have, if we include everyone who's died, it would just open up too many possibilities. It would be impossible for me to put together this list. Mm-hmm. It's really just think about like you're hosting a dinner and you want someone to come over. That's what we're talking about here. So we're not talking about five people coming all at once and like, you know, you're worried about those interactions. Just dinner with you.
Right. So unlike the previous discussion, we're keeping it simple. You just have to worry about eating with one other person. You don't have to worry about whether all the people on this list are going to get along well for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay. So I'll kick it off.
I can't wait.
If that's okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. The first one is probably my number one in real life, but I think it's also my most boring choice and obvious choice. Uh-huh. So I'll just start with it as my number five is Barack Obama.
Of course.
I would just, yes. I mean, there's no secret that I've always been, you know, an admirer of the way he tells his story. I love, you know, the campaign that he ran is what kind of drew me into politics in the first place.
Yeah.
And just like especially in these like crude times, you know, a genteel voice, you know, a voice that's just measured and calm and it's very soothing, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously he would have a lot of stories, but, you know, mainly I would want to know from him, like in his like not public facing persona, like in a private dinner setting, are we going to be okay?
Yeah.
Basically, is what I want to know.
Dad, yeah. Tell us, is it all going to be okay?
That's exactly what I want to ask.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's my number five. Mm-hmm. Number four is Issa Rae. Yes.
That's a great choice.
I just find her brand of storytelling so authentic. Mm-hmm. Like I can hear her voice in such a distinctive way.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I'll watch anything that she puts out there. And I think like Insecure was like vulnerable, and it was like really, I didn't get to finish it unfortunately, but just like really putting herself out there, I really appreciate that. And just like a very unique voice, and so I'd love to talk to her about, you know, like struggles in terms of breaking through, like the things that she had to endure, like what she felt like when she felt success, and like how she's dealing with it now. Mm-hmm. Right, those are the kind of things that I'd want to hear from her.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
That's my number four. My number three is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes. Oh, what a fun dinner that would be.
And that's it. That's really all it's about, right? Like, I would not, you know, some of these others, like obviously Obama, Issa Rae, I would feel like kind of intimidated. Uh-huh. But for something about Lin-Manuel, like I would just be like, welcome, and let's just have like a great time. It's going to be a musical dinner. And my question for him would be like, How?
That is the only question one can ask Lin-Manuel Miranda. How?
Everything is just how. Like, how did you think Hamilton would work? Like, how did you know? How do you put a song together? How do you balance all these projects and still have appear very joyful? Like, mm-hmm. you know, like how?
Yeah, I love that.
But he would be such a fun guest.
Yeah, that's really good.
My number two, I mean, we talk about her all the time. I'm a huge fan, Ali Wong, right? Mainly, I would want her over just to be like, hey, like a sincere thank you for being a trailblazer in your own right. But like not forgetting, you know, like the people who, you know, in your circles, your community, and like not pulling up the ladder behind you, you know? Really giving a platform, really... really being like a, you know, very positive voice. So I think if she came over to dinner, it would be like a sincere thank you and like a note of gratitude.
Yeah. I would also just be like, girl, this is a safe space. What happened with you and Justin?
What happened? What happened?
Mom and dad got divorced is what happened.
Yes. Yeah. What happened?
What happened?
But also thank you.
Yeah. 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 Mostly thank you, but also what happened?
I was about to say, but mostly what happened. But also, thank you. Let's be real. We're having dinner.
Yeah, that's true.
I want
the tea. That's what we're here for. That's
what we're serving for dessert.
Yes, definitely. Tea and cookies.
My number one dinner guest is, it's not even close for me. It's like I would so want this person. Just like dinner is not enough. I want a weekend with this person. Mm-hmm. Is Questlove.
Oh, yeah. That's really good. That's a great choice.
Every time I hear him in an interview tell a story, I like, please, just I just want to hear you talk and just tell stories for the rest of my life.
Yeah. He's right? got such an insane arsenal of them.
So good. So many stories. Like so thoughtful, so like relatable and grounded in ways that I totally didn't expect.
Yeah,
right. Because he's the drummer for the Roots. Like you wouldn't think that he had such relatable stories or like things that you know that he's insecure about or like worried about or anxious about. Yeah. I mean, I would. There's this one all-time favorite story of mine. I always recite it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the one where he was a DJ for Obama's White House farewell party.
Oh, my God. Can you even imagine? Just being a fly on the wall at that party. I think we've talked about this on the podcast. But
yes. Seriously. God. Seriously. But the thing I love about that story is, like, you know, he felt like he failed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, you know, like I was reading this as kind of like a funny story that ends there, but he takes his craft so seriously and so unironically that he just goes and then like decides to be a DJ at like random, like anonymous DJ at like roller rinks in Detroit, you know, just incredible. To kind of hone his craft. I mean, it's like, so like, what makes you tick? Like, where does that passion come from? Why are you still doing it after all these years?
Yeah. That reminds me of I listened to an interview between Rick Rubin and Andre 3000.
That was also a great conversation.
Yes, but similar vibes, right? Where like after Outkast, he was like, he got really into the bass clarinet and was playing it just like outside Starbucks.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, you are really just here for the pure love and exploration of music. Yeah. Like, you're fucking Andre 3000, and this is what you're doing outside, like, a strip mall in Decatur or something. Like, that's just so wild. What a fun list. Those were great choices.
You're also invited to my dinner party.
Oh, Chris, that'd be so fun. I would happily have dinner with you and any of these people.
But, you know, we get to talk all the time, whereas these people, you know, not as much.
Don't get the privilege.
I'm dying to hear your top five.
Okay. My number five is Joelkim Booster.
Nice.
Who we've discussed on this podcast. He's a comedian, an actor. He was the writer and executive producer of Fire Island. I think he would be so fun to hang out with because, one, we're both Midwest Asians, which is a very specific kind of Asian. And I think we would have just a hoot and a half talking about that.
Yes.
But also what I really love about him is that he takes pop culture extremely seriously. and he can talk with equal gravitas about like the art of screenwriting and like Great British Bake Off and why it was an injustice. It was unfair to Laura to let her get to the final at the end of last season. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, he can make such compelling arguments. And I just like, I think like the most interesting, the funnest people for me are the people who like can be like silly and serious in equal measure and be serious about the silly and vice versa, you know? So
yeah,
I think he'd be a solid hang.
Solid number five, oh, as per the usual.
My number five. My number four is Dua Lipa. So Dua Lipa is, for my money, the perfect pop star. She is so talented. She is a smoke show. She is also really smart and thoughtful and interested in lots of different things. She's got this great podcast where she interviews like fairly obscure people who are doing really remarkable work. She's bicultural. She like doesn't take herself too seriously. Like I love her. She's like everything I want in a pop star. And at the same time, she just seems like incredibly down to earth. And I feel like she would be able to reflect on her insane level of pop stardom and talk about it in a way that was like meaningful and accessible. Unlike, say, I don't know, Lady Gaga or Britney Spears, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of like what you were saying about people who would just be like that, like level of comfort. I feel like I like Dua Lipa is the maybe one uber famous person who I would be like, tell me what it's really like. You know what I mean? And we'd be able to have like a real conversation about it. My number three is Malcolm Gladwell. So we have a well-documented stand-up of Malcolm Gladwell on this podcast, but I just like, he's truly the kind of person who I feel like you could literally name any subject and he would be able to have an interesting conversation in a way that's truly infuriating, actually. But I think I would be so curious to hear him talk about, one, his own multiracial identity, which I've never really heard him talk at length about. But like, you know, he is biracial and he's very white passing. And I'm just very curious about like what that's like for him and how he understands how he conceptualizes his own identity. And I also want to talk to him about how what it feels like and looks like to have an empire where you get to make literally anything you want. You want to write a book? You write a book. You want to write a New Yorker piece? You write a New Yorker piece. You want to make a podcast? You make a podcast. Like, he just has that kind of cultural clout. And who else in the culture has that kind of cultural clout? What other writer has that kind of cultural clout?
Yes, the day of the public intellectual is over. So
I think he's the last one.
Last one. I mean, yeah, at that kind of volume, I think you're probably right. I'm trying to like think of others.
I mean, especially in the podcast era, there's plenty of public intellectuals, yeah, but in terms of people who can just like write books and magazine pieces and create podcasts like at will, I mean, he's the last of that era. Him and maybe Ta-Nehisi Coates. Ta-Nehisi Coates can do it too, but
yeah, he's been kind of gone for a while.
Yeah, he's really laying low these days.
Yeah,
where you wish? Yeah. I mean, good on him. Yeah. I wonder what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he got into a public dispute with, or I mean, not dispute, but like I think Cornel West
came after him.
Yeah,
so he
yeah.
got off Twitter.
Yeah, and then since then, haven't really heard much.
Well, he was on Instagram for a hot second.
Oh, he was.
Yes, but then that has also stopped. Speaking of, Lin-Manuel also got on Instagram.
Oh.
Great Instagram. And I don't know. Twitter is such a cesspool. I just feel like everybody should get off an Instagram. It's not perfect, obviously, but it's a much nicer place, I think. So anyway, yeah, one of the last great public intellectuals, Malcolm Gladwell, my number three. My number two, obviously, is Barack and Michelle Obama. I know it's cheating. It's two of them. but obviously, for the reasons you've said. But just like at the end of the day, like they are icon heroes who gave their lives to public service and still remains good people. And I would love to hear them talk about that. And also just like as a parent, like raising kids in the most impossible circumstance. And their kids seem to be lovely and well-adjusted and like have a good relationship with them. So like I have a lot of questions for them about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my number one was a huge surprise to me. I didn't expect this to be the case. My number one is Richard Rohr.
Whoa. That's awesome.
I didn't see it coming, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. I was waiting for like, I don't know, Beyonce. Yeah, totally. Or, you
know, like, something really
Richard Rohr.
Something really on brand. So for those who aren't familiar, Richard Rohr is a Catholic priest in the Franciscan order who writes about spirituality. And I mean, his name, like his, you know, floats around here and there if you're in progressive Christian spaces. But I heard him once on a podcast and I just really loved how he talked about spirituality because obviously he's Catholic, but like he comes from a place that is so open to questions and not having any answers and taking truths from other traditions and not accepting pat simplistic answers. I really loved it. And at this point in my life, like I left evangelicalism a long time ago, but I don't even necessarily find like mainline Christian frameworks all that helpful or meaningful a lot of the time. And so like I'm just like really interested in like what it looks like to have a base in a tradition, in a specific tradition, but still be like really open to everything else and like not dogmatic about it.
Yeah,
I just feel like there's very few examples of that I can think, certainly not in my, that I get to talk to, right?
Yeah.
And so like, and these are the kinds of spiritual conversations that I would really like to have, but there are not many people to have them with. But I feel like Richard Rohr is like, would just be like super accessible and thoughtful and kind and open to just like whatever question or thought I had, even if it was about myself. And yeah, I just feel like it would be a gift to be able to like talk with him about literally anything. So
that is a fantastic and unexpected number one, but it totally makes a lot of sense.
Thanks. Yes. I really didn't see it coming. I have to say that like I feel like this top five was like more revealing to me about myself than like, I mean, obviously Condiments. which I did love, but like, I feel like this kind of like opened up and it helped me articulate something that I hadn't been able to articulate, which is that I think sometimes I'm like, oh, I feel kind of over spirituality. And then I'm like, I actually don't think I'm over it. I think I just like, yeah. I don't have the opportunity to have maybe the kind of conversation I really want to have, you know?
Oh,
so
totally.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this top five opened that up for you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Our dream dinner party.
Oh my God. Can you imagine having Dua Lipa and Richard Rohr at the same dinner?
I think they would do fine.
I think they'd be great. Well. Oh my gosh, it'd be great. And Dua Lipa would interview him on her podcast later. It would be amazing.
Love would be the DJ.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I think like eventually though they'd forget that we were there and they would just
undoubtedly
kind of chill out with each
other. The two normies, yeah, they would definitely forget we were there.
We'd be busy in the kitchen trying like having a freak out, being like, oh my God.
Totally. So anyway, I freaking love that top five. So yes. I'm glad we did it. What should we do next time?
Okay, so I came across this on a Reddit thread, and I thought it was a great topic.
Where all good things come from, Reddit threads.
Some good things, I should say, yeah. But yes, the discussion was around like pieces of pop culture that have not aged well at all. These are movies, this could be music, I'm sure there are crazy lyrics out there. It could be, TV shows that have not aged well at all.
I love it. There's just so much to choose from.
It's going to be a jaw-dropping kind of walk down memory lane.
Totally. Exactly. Can you even believe? Yeah. All right, this was fun.
Let's do it again soon.
Looking forward to it.
Not committing myself to a time this time.